Okay, very good. Now we reach the Habitat agenda item, and we've got four or five things we got to get through. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Bachman. And the first thing on the, our agenda is the salmon, the possibility of a salmon action. So, Ms. Bachman?
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Just to orient people to this report, we've got three different topics that the Habitat Committee discussed and that we might have some motions on that I'll be presenting on. And then I'll turn it over to Zachary Joka from BOEM, and he's going to give an overview of their activities relative to the Gulf of Maine leasing process. And then Jenny Couture will wrap up with just kind of where we're going on developing council comments on those issues. And if there's any questions for Jenny, she can kind of take those. And if there's additional comments you want us to add to the letter that we haven't yet identified, we can talk about that. Really quickly, before I move into the aquaculture, I did just want to briefly acknowledge, I believe many of you know Dr. David Stevenson. He's a longtime 20-year veteran of the staff at GARFO and the Habitat Group. He's retiring at the end of the month. He's been a huge contributor to the Habitat Plan Development Team for a number of years since I started. He was really important to our omnibus EFH process and other actions. So I just wanted to thank him publicly for his service to the PDT and to the council and wish him all the best. Doing more fun things than habitat and wind issues in his retirement. So thanks for indulging me. Next slide. So what we're here to talk about today is the idea of initiating an framework adjustment to the Atlantic Salmon Fishery Management Plan that would basically authorize the possession of cultured Atlantic salmon from, you know, aquaculture projects that are conducted in the EEZ. Sorry.
Hang on. I'm looking at the blue screen. Maybe we could get your slides up as well. It'd be great. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Can I go ahead? So just to recap, because, you know, I don't think most of us were involved with the council process, or maybe some of you were, when the Atlantic Salmon FMP was adopted. It was, you know, a very straightforward action initially, and the idea was to really complement management that the states were doing, as well as the North Atlantic Salmon Conservation Organization, or NASCO. Essentially, you know, between those two efforts and those two kind of sets of groups, there was a gap in management between 3 and 12 miles from shore. And so the council FMP was designed to close that loop. And as the main focus of the FMP and the regulations that came out of the FMP was to prohibit the directed or incidental fishery in federal waters. And so that covered that 3 to 12 mile and out to the limit of the EEZ. And there was language in the regulations initially and stemming from the original FMP that evidence that fish were harvested from aquaculture enterprises would rebut the presumption that you were in violation of the regulations. Subsequently, the council adopted Amendment 1 to the FMP. This was actually folded in with the Omnibus EFH Amendment 1, but it was kind of a separate section. And this specified that the council could initiate an action to allow for salmon aquaculture projects in the EEZ, you know, provided consistency with the goals and objectives of the FMP. So you kind of have these two regulations, one about prohibiting possession and another about specifying that you can authorize aquaculture through a framework. At the time of the original FMP, as I understand it, there weren't proposals to do aquaculture in federal waters, and so this is kind of a newer thing that's come up. You know, at the time of Amendment 1, the council, I don't know if the Aquaculture Committee was still active, but it had recently been active. And then there was also a lot of discussion about what sorts of actions the council could undertake in a framework. So there's similar language in some of our other FMPs as well. So what we're talking about now is a, you know, fairly narrow aquaculture framework. The committee recommendation is that the council initiate today and develop an action focused on authorizing possession of salmon. We added some language in the committee motion about provided that the salmon are cultured under our NASCO standards and those sort of safeguard conservation of salmon. and other elements of aquaculture plans that are kind of consistent with best practices. The reason we're talking about salmon and aquaculture right now is that there is a specific project, the Blue Water Fisheries Project, which we've discussed before, that is being proposed, and so that's kind of where the conversation came from, but it would be appropriate to apply this authorization generically to any future salmon aquaculture. Obviously, that's a growing industry, and it seems unlikely that this would be the last time that something like this is proposed. The committee also recommended exploration of enforcement and reporting issues kind of related to that possession through the framework. And, you know, the reason this has been on the priority list for all of 2022, but we held back a little bit on considering initiation because we were waiting for the DEIS process for Blue Water Fisheries Project to kick off. We, I think, could have, you know, waited a little longer to do this if it seemed that that project in particular wasn't considering Atlantic salmon culture. Maybe this is something we could have left for a later time. So we were just kind of waiting for that to catch up a bit. There's obviously, you know, hopefully people are familiar with our aquaculture policy. Those of you who joined the council since December 2020, I would encourage you to take a look at it. At the time, we also approved a submarine cables policy, and then after that, we updated our offshore wind energy policy. So we've done a lot of thinking in recent years about the effects of non-fishing activities on fish habitat, and fisheries, and we have a number of best practices identified in those policies. All or most of these issues are going to be dealt with in the permitting process for specific projects, so there's a lot of opportunities through that permitting process for the council to comment, either at the pre-application stage, which we have been involved in for Blue Water Fisheries, due to our, you know, folks at GARFO kind of looping us in there, you know, or during formal public comment periods. And so, you know, we would anticipate, and the committee recommended, continuing to address these types of issues through consultation, interagency consultation, as projects are developed. And this could apply to regional initiatives as well, like aquaculture opportunity areas. We can use our policy as a foundation for commenting there. The Habitat Advisory Panel met after the committee on September 12th. They didn't make any formal consensus statements or motions on this, but generally the tone of the conversation was kind of agreeing that the council should initiate this action. Some comments that were made, you know, perhaps the council should consider expanding this either now or in some future action to other council-managed species, sort of formally authorizing possession from aquaculture projects. It just kind of this notion that it would be important for aquaculture developers to share information about their projects with the council, data about their projects as they move forward, you know, for example, water quality or other monitoring that they're doing, wanting to keep abreast of developments there. And just as a policy, you know, developing this action, I think, indicates support on the behalf of the council for aquaculture under kind of reasonable circumstances. And so there was some discussion around that. We did talk about, and these are things that I think the council and the committee have talked about in the past, there's a lawsuit in the Gulf of Mexico, and what are the implications there? Would there be EFH consultation on blue water fisheries? And the answer is yes. And then, you know, just kind of a question about why do we need to do an action like this, given the language about possession from aquaculture that's from the salmon regulations? And I think, you know, the answer there, and I'm sure GARFO can speak to this, but is related to the fact that there's that aquaculture authorization and the possession language kind of combined in the regulations, signaling that the council felt that the aquaculture authorization was potentially needed down the road when we implemented that amendment back in 1999. So just to wrap up with the committee motion so you can see it, and then I think Joan could bring it up as well. So you can read it here and covered it in the earlier slides. You know, because the salmon FMP doesn't allow possession, that's why this action would be needed, or would at least express a clearer intent on the part of the council. And it's the committee felt it was important for the council to continue to be involved in these sorts of issues related to species that we manage. So that's all I have. I'm happy to take questions. And then there's the motion.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Any questions so far? Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everybody. Michelle, I asked this during the committee meeting. We didn't have an answer then. I don't necessarily expect that there's going to be an answer readily available now. But My question then was and is, if there was going to be any genetic markings associated with the aquaculture fish, the aquacultured Atlantic salmon. And as an example, I'll give you striped bass. Wild striped bass have lateral lines down the sides of them that are unbroken lines, whereas farm-raised striped bass have broken lines that makes them easily identifiable to their wild counterparts. And I know in here it says evidence that fish were harvested from aquaculture enterprises will be sufficient to rebut the presumption that Atlantic salmon were taken in violation of the regulation. But being in having experience in the aquaculture field ourselves, my company, there is a certain amount of pilferage or theft that goes on in aquaculture. It happens. It's not an everyday occurrence, but it does happen. But I know that there are genetic markings associated with other fish, and there's other examples, such as hard clams and stuff like that. So just wondering that. I fully support the motion. That was my question. We didn't have an answer then, and that was not too long ago.
It's not something we've taken a lot of time to look into since the committee meeting. I know that we did discuss that the source of salmon is, and kind of ensuring a source for the salmon is a part of the permitting process, and I don't have information about exactly how those fish are detected, but I think that is part of it. And I think probably to the language in the committee motion about enforcement and reporting and figuring out those issues and, you know, like your question of what does it mean? How do you know if it's from aquaculture versus a wild salmon? I think those are the types of issues I would envision exploring in the framework per the direction from the committee and the council if the motion passes.
Mr. Tracy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess kind of a follow-up on Mr. Hughes' question. The motion's obviously straightforward. What needs to be done to make the adjustment to permit the possession? I guess what I'm not clear on, are we going to get about the overall permitting and the evaluation of the farm's impact on the ecosystem, you know, bigger questions like that? Where is that done? What role do we have in that?
Sure. So that occurs through the permitting process for the individual project. Aquaculture permitting is quite complicated. There's some information in our backgrounder to support the policy, and then also another document on our website that I encourage you to read if you're curious about how it works. But basically, for finfish aquaculture, there's EPA, and there's also Army Corps permits, and then NOAA is the coordinator on the EIS because it's multi-agency. And so all those sorts of issues are explored. The council is kind of enhanced member of the public, I think, as it's been described to us by NOAA. We're kind of invited, you know, and especially for an issue like salmon where we have an FMP, to participate as best we can in some of those early interagency conversations throughout the process. And then we, you know, can obviously comment during public comment periods, which are kind of scattered throughout, you know, through the EPA and Army Corps and then through the NEPA process as well.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay. If you could put the motion back up on the board. Okay, great. So I'm going to go to the public. Any questions from the public? Seeing none. Okay. So on behalf of the committee, I move to initiate an Atlantic salmon aquaculture framework focused on possession of farmed salmon raised according to NASCO standards. Other issues to explore, including enforcement and reporting. The council would continue to consult and coordinate on individual aquaculture projects in addition to developing this framework. And that is a committee motion. It does not need a second. And in addition to the rationale Michelle's already given us, I would say that this is the first and best opportunity to get engaged in this new thing that's coming. So, and also the timing is good, and I think the NEPA analysis is going to start shortly, and it would be nice if the council was on record as being preparing this framework for that. So with that, is there any discussion from the council on the motion on the board? Ms. Ware.
Thank you. I want to speak in support of the motion. I think it's well-rounded in terms of the action as well as consultation. I did just want to continue to advocate that during the framework process, the council looks at state regulations for salmon aquaculture and reporting. I know I brought up consistency with state waters at our last council meeting. I think that's going to be really important on this topic. So I just advocate that that be part of the process. And if the appropriate people need to be brought to the table, we can certainly do that.
Thank you, Ms. Ware. Anybody else from the council? Anyone from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Is there any opposition to this motion? Seeing none, any abstentions? Seeing none, motion passes by unanimous consent. Ms. Bachman.
Thank you. So back to the slides whenever you're ready. While we're switching over, just to note for people, and I don't want you to all get up and run out of the room right now, but the offshore wind developers are all the way across the building down the hall, and they'd love to chat with you. They also have beer and wine. I know that's probably better than talking about habitat. I guess you guys have to stay, but in any case, they're there till 7, so I think there's plenty of time to check in with them and chat about wind development issues after we break. All right, so next topic is the three-year review of dedicated habitat research areas, or DHRAs. These are areas that we, I think through the Omnibus Habitat Amendment, which went into effect in April of 2018, we hadn't previously had any designations like this. So they're managed areas that are in the regulations. They have specific fishing or restrictions associated with them. And specific objectives for their use that were part of the Habitat Amendment, which I'll talk about in a minute. Something else that we did through the Habitat Amendment was establish a sunset provision for allowing for administrative removal of these areas if it felt in a later date that that was appropriate. So the regional office began this summer a review of the areas and their use relative to the council's research objectives. They spoke with me, and they spoke, I know, with staff at Stillwagon Bank National Marine Sanctuary, who are quite invested in the Stillwagon DHRA. And then they also went out and did a public 30-day public comment period, which closed the day after the committee meeting in August. And because of the timing of that comment period relative to when the best date to have our committee, we didn't yet have the findings and the report from the regional office at the time that the committee met. And so we had a lot of discussion about this issue, but the committee sort of deferred to you today to potentially make a recommendation because they wanted to see the report first. So today's action would be to review GARPO's findings and have a conversation about these DHRAs, and the council can potentially recommend retaining them, one or both of them, or removing them, and give some guidance to GARPO about kind of how to proceed with an administrative action. If nothing happens, kind of the no action option here would be that the DHRAs would continue. There's nothing that sort of automatically eliminates them at any point in time, but there is that discretion to remove them if appropriate. So I'm just going to kind of go through what the two regions are. The Stillwagon DHRA, it's basically the southern half of the Western Gulf of Maine habitat and groundfish closures. So it has, fishing has been restricted in this area, certain types of fishing since the late 90s. There are obviously exceptions for approved research fishing under an EFP. The overall purpose of this area was to facilitate the study of the different research objectives that we identified in the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. And really, kind of the purpose of DHRAs writ large is to focus research efforts on these locations and to sort of facilitate the permitting process. You know, some of our area closures and the effects of them are, you know, they're implemented long term. We expect, you know, the effects to play out over the long term. Habitat studies looking at recovery can take, you know, quite a number of years to see the results of. Some of the early work in this area in particular indicated that even after 12 years, the system was continuing to change. So this kind of long-term duration of DHRAs and sending a message about, you know, the importance of areas to conduct research, I think is a big part of why they were designated in the habitat amendment. Diversity of habitat types here, obviously Stillwagon is a highly productive area. And so the thinking was that better understanding in this part of the Gulf of Maine could sort of improve our fisheries management overall. And this is all from the habitat amendment. The other DHRA that was designated as part of this action, Omnibus Amendment 2, was the Georges Bank DHRA. It has a slightly narrower set of fishing restrictions, just to mobile bottom tending gears, trawls, and dredges. And then, again, very similar purpose to facilitate studies that address these objectives and to kind of focus research activities. Specifically, when this area was implemented, we talked about trying to better understand the relationship between scallop distribution, abundance, growth, and seabed type. If you'll recall from Jonathan's slides yesterday, you know, this is adjacent to some areas of very high biomass, but it tends to not really have a lot of scallop biomass, and so there's kind of some interesting questions as to why. And so I think that was the thinking of what might be explored in this research area. And just to footnote, because it's mentioned in the regional office's report, we do have another dedicated habitat research area in Jordan Basin that was approved through the Coral Amendment that doesn't have a sunset provision. It's not part of this review. It also doesn't have fishing restrictions associated with it. It's just to kind of focus attention on that area. So that's kind of outside of this and not something that we're, I can answer questions about that area if people are interested, but that's not something we're talking about really here. So this just outlines the research objectives. Encourage you to go back to the Omnibus Draft EIS Volume 3 if you are interested in kind of reading some more about this. But these are the four themes. And then the sunset provision basically provides that the RA should initiate a review starting at 3 years after establishment to think about whether we should maintain or sunset the DHRAs. And the criteria, are they actively being used? And, you know, you could document that in a number of ways towards kind of the research objectives on the prior slide. And so there's kind of a more of a flowchart. This is on the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. It was also in the notice that GARFO published looking for their comment period. When the council implemented this initially, and this is straight from the Habitat Amendment, it wasn't necessarily requiring that research be happening within that 3 years. We know that sometimes these things can take a while to spin up. It was more, you know, is something being planned or potentially funded? You know, that was the council's thinking, was that would also kind of qualify continuance of an area. So the Habitat Committee, as I mentioned, didn't make a recommendation when they met about retention or removal. I don't think there was a, you know, sense that they were unwilling to do so. It was just they were waiting for that additional information to come from the regional office about their review. We did talk some about kind of concerns that removing a DHRA could send maybe the wrong message that this type of habitat research isn't a council priority or of interest, and that maybe that would be a mistake to do. And that we also talked about the fact that for the Stillwagon DHRA, there are, as I mentioned, overlapping fishery management closures. So in practice, sunsetting that DHRA wouldn't affect anyone's ability to fish there with the gear types that are associated with the DHRA designation. That's different for the Georges Bank DHRA, where removing it would allow fishing to continue to resume in that area if people desired. The Georges Bank DHRA used to be part of Closed Area 1, and since that area is no longer in effect, it would open up potentially some opportunities. Just to summarize the findings of GARFO's review, yes, there's ongoing work in both DHRAs. A lot of it is related to different resource surveys, but there is a specific project in the Stillwagon DHRA. Superintendent DeCola spoke briefly about this yesterday morning. And they're actually out on the water this week, his staff, along with some Boston University researchers. In general, the work that was investigated and is outlined in the review is expected to continue. They didn't identify or uncover additional potential research. And then the video analysis in Stillwagon is the one that really relies on that DHRA regulation and the associated fishing restrictions. The AP talked about this. There was no consensus statement from the AP. There was about removal or retention. There was one member who recommended retaining the Georges Bank DHRA to continue to think about exploring those questions that were raised during that omnibus habitat amendment process. So today, you could make a recommendation to GARFO about retaining or removing these areas. They are different, so probably talking about them separately would be sensible. You could defer to GARFO, I suppose, and let them take administrative action as they see fit. We could think about it and tell GARFO we will make a recommendation to them later. So I think that kind of covers everything that you might do here. We do have some draft motions that kind of explore all the different permutations of options under that first bullet about removal or retention that we can pull up as needed. But that's all I have. I'm happy to take questions, or I'm sure GARFO could address any issues that I have not. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bachman. So I'm going to ask Mr. Pentney, as far as this last bullet goes, what is the timeline for the council to make a recommendation to you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is no specific timeline in the regs. You know, it says that I will initiate a review after 3 years, which we have done. And then it says that we will consult with the council as we are doing, and that after we consult with the council, we can make a decision as to whether we're going to remove the DHRA designation. So there's no time limit on your consultation or this consultation. If the council needs additional time to consider the report, work it through the PDT or the Habitat Committee, should it so desire, we would certainly await the conclusion of that process.
Okay, thank you, Mike. So with that said, that gives us another option. Of course, our next opportunity to address it will be in December if we have time on that agenda, which I am not sure if we will. So why don't we take a few questions and we'll see where everybody wants to go. And we have a variety of motions, mix and match motions that are prepared, and we'll put up the appropriate one after the discussion. So Ms. Eitri and then Mr. Hansen.
Thank you. Michelle, I feel like maybe I'm just having a late in the afternoon issue right now. I was quickly scrolling through the summary evaluation from GARFO. I thought you said in your presentation that there's research occurring in the Georges Bank DHRA, but when I read it first, I thought that it indicated that ultimately there had not been any research in that dedicated habitat research area. So I just want to, 5 o'clock, make sure, has there been research in the Georges Bank area?
Sure. I probably was talking too fast. Yes, in the sense that there are various monitoring surveys. SMS goes in there routinely. The Science Center surveys has chosen there, but not as relates to the specific questions identified in the omnibus habitat amendment. So
thank you. I guess in my brain, I was just separating out the survey work and then the research question and at 5 o'clock. So I'm done now. Thanks.
Mr. Hansen, and then Mr. Salerno.
I'm sorry. That was my question. So I was not aware of any dedicated research in the Georges Bank DHRA. I think the survey work would occur whether it's a DHRA or not.
Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michelle, I was just wondering if for some reason, if we choose or if we go to look for to retain these DHRAs, are we considering another 3 years, another time period indefinitely? Or is that open for discussion as well, a time frame for these as well?
Yeah, so going through this review process makes me feel like in hindsight I could have written the omnibus amendment more clearly. We didn't specify, and the regulations don't specify when we might reconsider this. So I think that would be a discussion to have, maybe not necessarily today, but in the future, to kind of clarify the council's intent of, you know, if they're retained for now, is there an idea that we want to reinitiate a review at some future point? I think that would probably be a good idea, and I'm sure Mr. Pentney would appreciate us giving some clarity to that, but No, it's not specified at present.
Okay, anyone else from the council? Anyone from the public? Seeing none. Okay, back to the council. So I can put a motion on the board that says we should leave them both in and we can beat it up, or I can look for suggestions from around the room, which I would prefer to do. So, Ms. Etri?
While I have some initial thoughts, I was wondering if maybe what would be most appropriate is to send this back to the Habitat Committee for us to kind of banter this around a little bit and come up with a recommendation. I know timing's tight, but it sounded like time-wise, we might have some flexibility for that. So that's currently where my thought process is.
Okay, well, we have one suggestion. Do we have other suggestions? Mr. Hansen.
I think the Stillwagon DHRA is probably valuable, but I don't see any value in continuing the Georges Bank DHRA. So maybe we could deal with each one separately.
Okay. Anybody else? Seeing none. Well, Mr. Hansen, I could put a motion on the board that says leave Stellwagen and take Georges Bank out, if that's what you would prefer. I'm happy to do that right up front.
Sure.
Okay. Why don't we see if we can get whatever number motion that is, and I'll put it on the board and we can have a discussion about it. Okay. This is not a committee motion. It's going to need a second. So I move to recommend that the regional administrator retain the Stellwagen Bank DHRA, but remove the Georges Bank DHRA designation using the authority granted by the council in Omnibus EFH Amendment 2. So I'm looking for a second. Ms. Etri, would you second that motion?
Yes, I will.
Okay, seconded by Ms. Etri. Discussion on the motion to the council. Mr. Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to catch it before the meeting got, or the motion got made and seconded. I'm in support of retaining both of these. I was going to suggest maybe you take them in individual motions, because I'd prefer to keep both of the DHRAs in place for the time being. So I'd have to vote against this motion, even though I want to keep the Stellwagen one. But we'll just see how it all unfolds. But I think it could be helpful to split these into two separate motions. I thought that's what Mr. Hansen was originally suggesting.
All right, if that's your suggestion, Mr. Smith, you can make a motion to divide if you'd like. Okay.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to split them individually. Or a motion to divide, I guess, is what
motion
you said.
Motion to divide the question.
Here. Yep.
I need a second for that motion. Would anyone second that motion? Mr. Pierdnock. Okay. So we'll do them one at a time. Why don't we take the Stellwagen Bank one first? We got to get the language on the board, but
we need to approve the motion to divide.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, rats. Just going too fast for my own good. Okay. So is there any discussion on the motion to divide? Any objections to divide? The motion on the board? Seeing none, okay. We can divide the question. Just give us a second. So we'll address, why don't we make the first one? Yeah. Retain the Stellwagen Bank DHRA, and then you can wipe out but remove the Georges Bank DHRA and go back and have the designation using at the end, designation using. So, and then I guess 9C would be to remove Georges Bank. The council recommends that we remove George's Bank designation, et cetera. There you go. Okay, well, they'll get the language on the board, but our first consideration is retaining Stellwagen Bank. Is there any discussion? Mr. Pentney?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm not going to speak to the motion itself. I'll be abstaining since it's a recommendation to me. But because it will be a recommendation to me, and I value the advice of the council, some additional rationale for both motions would, I think, be helpful. If the council wishes to retain the Stellwagen, maybe just a sentence or two about the basis or the rationale for retaining it, and then if the council's will is to remove it, remove the George's Bank, I think also some rationale for that would be helpful as well. Thanks.
Okay, so I guess since I made the motion, you know, in my mind, the utility of the Stellwagen Bank, DHRA, is pretty well documented, and there's ongoing work in there, and I see no reason to stop that work or the opportunity to do that work in that area. So that would be my rationale. So I'm going to go to the council. You good with that, Mike? Okay. I have Jeff Smith, and then I have Dan Salerno.
My hand was on up inadvertently, Mr. Chairman. I apologize.
Mr. Salerno.
I was wondering if the maker of the motion and the seconder would take a friendly of adding a retaining the Stellwagen DHRA designation for another 3 years with a review process.
That's a given, isn't it?
Not by the motion on hand.
I might ask Mr. Pentney if that's something that you would consider, because it's the timeline for review is uncertain to me. But if we put, I mean, it's our recommendation to you. If that's our recommendation to you, it probably is fine. But if it's too specific.
No, I was actually going to, Ms. Bachman raised this, you know, issue that the process after we conduct this review, that the process is uncertain. So I was going to suggest that, you know, one possible outcome is if nothing else changes, we could change the wording in the current regulations to suggest this review happens every 3 years or some other time frame, if that was the council's preference for us to consider. So this seems fair.
Okay, so I'm fine with it. Ms. Etria, are you fine with it? Okay. Thank you, Dan, for that. Anybody on the council like to speak to motion 9B? Seeing none. Anyone from the public? Back to the council. Is there any opposition to 9B? Seeing none. Are you abstaining, Mr. Pentney? Okay. Motion passes with one by consent with one abstention. Okay, so now we're on to what is now 9C, that the council remove the George's Bank DHRA designation using the authority granted by the council and Omnibus EFH Amendment 2. That is the motion on the board. I'm going to go to the council first. Mr. Aristad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could somebody provide just a 30-second overview of the history of this designated research area, when it was created, and what the intended purpose was? I realize it hasn't been used of late. That was indicated by the letter from Garfo, but I just personally would like a little more information. Thank you.
Sure. One of the slides does cover it in brief, but basically, as we, I think it's actually in the EFH regulations to consider habitat research objectives, or I can't remember the exact language, but a notion of research related to EFH management is something that councils are supposed to, I think, consider. Obviously, we consider research priorities more broadly. During Omnibus Amendment 2 development, the plan development team, working with the committee and the council, talked at length about establishing sort of a portfolio of research areas that would help us address the questions that I identified on the kind of four topic areas in diverse ecosystems, so that you would kind of see if you saw, you know, a pattern of fishing disturbance and impacts relative to production in one area, you know, is that consistent with what you see in other parts of the region? So we had a lot of questions and fewer answers than we wanted in order to be able to kind of review and revise our system of management areas. And so as we went through the process, we winnowed down the potential DHRA designations to three. We also suggested one in Eastern Maine that wasn't approved by the council in the omnibus amendment. But when the council took final action on the omnibus in the spring of 2015, recommended designating this DHRA. At the time, it was the area was closed as part of closed area one, so it has been closed to many types of fishing for quite a long time, since the 90s, obviously. And then once the omnibus amendment was reviewed and approved and implemented in April of 2018, so it's been closed for a little over 4 years as a dedicated habitat research area. And in that time, there's been the survey work that's been described in Garfo's memo, but no additional kind of directed work focused on the habitat questions. We've talked through the habitat committee process a lot about kind of the challenges of identifying funding and resources to conduct this type of habitat research. So, you know, there's not just interest required, but, you know, kind of more than that. So it's a little bit of a tricky issue, but so there has been a DHRA for 4 years and research hasn't been done to explore these objectives. So.
Pete, you want more than that?
I'm all set. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So I have Ms. Etrie, Mr. Smith, and Mr. Salerno. Ms. Etrie.
Thank you. We might have already done it, but just along the lines of the previous motion, just a little bit of rationale. When we specify these DHREs, we were looking for some areas where we could actually answer some research objectives, but we were also mindful of the fact that if research wasn't occurring there may be no value in continuing to keep them closed. While there has been survey research going on here, nothing's going to prevent that survey research from continuing. So at this point in time, it seems to me that there's no additional dedicated research that's happening in these areas, and that there's nothing that really warrants keeping it closed. And so opening it back up at this point in time after this amount of time, I think, is warranted in light of this review process.
Okay, thank you for that, Ms. Etrie. I have Mr. Smith and then Mr. Salerno.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Entering into this, I noted that there was no recommendations coming out of the committee either way on either one of these, and I myself was of a similar line as Ms. Etrie heading into this, that thought we might be able to send it back to the committee for one more round. I recognize from the letter from the agency that there has not been research activity in that area to date. I don't believe we should keep it closed if there's no research activity happening in there. The purpose of the closure is for research, but I do believe I heard Michelle mention that there was some interest either at the committee or at the AP about possibly doing some scallop research in there. So it would be my preference to vote this one down, to let the Habitat Committee have one more discussion around it, and make sure we're having a full consideration of what may happen out there before we decide to get rid of this one. So I would hope we could allow the committee one more shot at this, and then if nothing comes forward, we could address it in December. So for those reasons, I'll be voting against this one and hope the committee gets one more shot at it. Thanks.
Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The background you provided to Mr. Aristad is actually quite helpful. Kind of gives a history of this area that we're talking about. In my mind, though, I'm a little concerned of opening up now negates the possibility of doing research, because while I don't anticipate a rush to everyone start going in there fishing, what have you, We do probably expect there will be some exploratory. You're taking off the table the potential to actually review a unique area that has been closed to mobile fishing for some time now for the research community. And I have to admit, coming from the research community, sometimes it takes time to come up with ideas, come up with the research, to actually get something on paper to actually be doing. I would be definitely willing to keep this closed for another 3 years. At that time, I'd be willing to rediscuss this again. So at this point, I'm going to have to vote no against this motion.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the council? I'm going to go out to the public. Mr. Brogan. Hang on, Gib. Okay, there you go.
There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. Looking at this motion, I'm questioning whether without this DHRA, it does provide some habitat conservation value, whether it was designed to or not. Whether just removing this and making this an open area, will the habitat measures that are in place to minimize adverse effects on EFH, will they meet the goals and objectives of OHA2? I know that some of the measures that were proposed in OHA2 were rejected because they were contrary to that, and they altogether didn't meet the requirements for the sub-region. And I'm questioning whether we remove this DHRA, will the remaining measures meet the requirement of both the OHA2 and Magnuson. So I'd encourage the council to pass over this one at this time and move on and maybe revisit it in the future. Thanks very much.
Ms. Bachman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we wrote the omnibus EFH amendment to EIS, assuming that these areas might sunset at some point in the future and that they would no longer be providing the habitat conservation value that is inherent in gear restrictions in these areas. Obviously, there's kind of different things going on with each of these two DHRAs because one has other overlying designations that have the same restrictions, and then this Georges Bank one does not. But we didn't presume long-term continuance of this area as kind of part of the council's portfolio of adverse effects minimization, if you will.
Mr. Brogan? Hold on. Go ahead, Gib.
Thank you for that clarification, Michelle. That's important, and that answers my question. I still think that this area does provide habitat protection as it's currently operating, and that the rollback of these protections should be evaluated and measured against the goals and objectives of both the OHA2 and the each of the FFPs. So thanks, I appreciate it.
Anyone else from the public? Mr. Smallowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz. I think it should remain closed. I was the chair of the JAP process, the Joint Advisory Panel process in Omnibus 1, and we're the ones that decided to close that area as a habitat zone, primarily because no one was fishing it. The seasonal haddock closure was north of it. There was no scallops in the area, no monkfish. No one was really interested in it. It's been closed since 1995, anyway. But what I find interesting is we've been in there doing research with scallops several occasions. We've dumped towards the eastern side a million, 2 million scallops and trapped them. To understand this habitat, it's really weird because it's sand. I think it has much higher current than the models predict it has. To the northeast, inside closed area one is hard bottom. Just to the east, you have a little Georges. to the west in the open area of the channel, you have some of the highest fishing effort of scallops and groundfish. And with the SMAS surveys, it's one of the highest areas of vertical epifauna. So you have an area that's heavily fished with tremendous biodiversity and epifauna, and then you go into this area and there's nothing there. I think you can study it by just using the optical surveys, the SMAS surveys, the HABCAM surveys, and do some passes through there each year to determine what's happening there. It is an amazing study site, and we might see with climate change that, in fact, the biota changes there. The currents could certainly change, that water temperatures could change. So I think it should be heavily monitored, and not at great expense, just sort of added on as a priority to the RSA surveys to continue optical surveys in that area. And if for some reason it gets a scallop set, we have the opportunity to open it up in 3 years or 4 years when those scallops mature. So I suggest to keep it closed.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Any further discussion on 9C? Mr. Alexander.
Based on what I've heard, considering the fact that this area has been undisturbed for so long, there's probably not too many places like that left. I think that alone is probably a good reason to hang on to it. I like what Ron had to say. And at the very least, we should entertain Jeff's notion of sending this back to the committee, but I'm all for just hanging on to it. Thank you.
Okay, well, just to be clear, there is no motion to send it back to the committee. If you want to make that motion, Mark, as a substitute, that's fine.
No, I was just agreeing with Jeff's notion to do that, not motion.
Okay, sorry. Mr. Hansen.
I just question what this sunset provision was put in place for. 3 years, this is what it was designed to do. It hasn't been used. I think now, since the 3 years are up, what's going to happen the next time? Is there another three-year cycle that's starting now? Or do we have to make a motion to do that again? Or is this going to remain closed forever?
Go ahead, Mike.
While I would suggest that the cleanest thing, if it's the council's intent to recommend that we keep it, we leave the DHRA designation in place for, say, another 3 years, the cleanest thing would be for there to be an affirmative motion recommending that. If this motion simply fails with no additional motion, you know, I would certainly take into consideration the first motion and acknowledge that coming back to the council every so often for a review of these areas is clearly what was behind the intent of Habitat Amendment 2. And we would certainly consider using our discretion to make that change and extend the three-year review for the Georges Bank DHRA as well as the recommended one for the Stellwagen DHRA, should this motion fail.
Okay. Ms. Braun, and then Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not sure if I can make a motion to substitute to send this back to the committee so that we can discuss it and then make another decision, or if we should have this fail, or we don't have make the vote and then make a subsequent motion. What's your preferred way of going forward?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to make a substitute, Doug.
Then I'd like to make a motion to substitute to send this back to the Habitat Committee.
For further review.
For further review, yes.
Thank you. Okay, we'll get the language on the board. It will need a second. Ms. Griffin, are you seconding this motion? Okay, very good. So it will be seconded by Ms. Griffin. Okay. I'm not sure if Robert's rules of order are going to be Reed's rules of order, but I just have a question. I'm happy to withdraw 9C since we're not under a time suck. If there is a reasonable consent to do that without having a discussion for the next half hour. I'm seeing nodding heads. Anybody have a problem with that? Want to talk about it some more? Okay, so I'd like to withdraw. I can withdraw, right?
Mitch.
Yeah. Okay.
We just vote on it right here.
Okay. What? All right. Stop. Thank you. Okay. So I get a pretty good idea where this is headed. Is there any discussion on 9D as a substitute? Ms. Etri?
I had my hand up previously. I will just say that I support the idea of remanding this back to the Habitat Committee because I think that we can have additional discussions about the merit of keeping this. And equally, if folks do want to keep this going, we can work on making sure that we have the appropriate language that's consistent. And I feel like we might just be late in the day and not getting there if we stick this one out. So I support 90.
Okay. Any other comments from the council? Anybody from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Is there any opposition to Ms. Braun's motion, which is to remand this back to the Habitat Committee for further review? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes, and it is now becomes the main motion. Is there any objection to the motion on the board? Seeing none, passes by consent. Back to the committee. Okay, Ms. Bachman.
That's all I have on this topic, unless there's anything else from the regional administrator about their review or process.
Mike?
We will await further input on the Georges Bank DHRA before making any decisions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Ms. Bachman.
Okay, so back to the slides. The last topic I was going to cover before turning it over to Boehm as review of a final report on an exempted fishing permit project. If you'll recall, the council back in February, we had a discussion about exemptions in the Great South Channel Habitat Management Area that allow for clam and mussel dredging in selected parts of the HMA. We also have two research areas in the Great South Channel HMA. And within one of those, there's a project that we're gonna talk about. So we had a lot of kind of conversations about that project and also kind of exemption program generally in February, but we were still pending receipt of the final report. And so where the council landed in February was that the committee, with the help of the plan development team, would take a look at the final report once it was received. So we received it. We did have some additional back and forth throughout the spring with the folks working on the project at Coon Mesa Farm Foundation. We got the final report in June, and so the committee, the plan development team discussed it in July. The summary of that meeting is in your binder, and then we also drafted a memo to the committee with our findings. So the committee reviewed that on August 18th and then appended their own memo to ours, and so both of those as a combined document are in your binder. So hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at that, but I'll just go through a few highlights. So just taking us back to it was actually in December of 2018 when the council approved the exemption program for the HMA, authorizing the use of clam dredges and mussel dredges in those three areas and also identifying the two research areas. And so subsequent to that, through the plan development team and the committee, we talked about, you know, if we have these research areas, what types of work and objectives do we want to see addressed in those areas? And so the council approved a document with research objectives in June of 2019, you know, thinking that these would be accomplished through a portfolio of projects, not just one project. Obviously, this is kind of a lengthy list. So there have been a few different projects proposed, and only this one EFP that was approved and has been conducted in the habitat management area. And so this project had a set of objectives that relate to the council's objectives, were obviously a bit narrower. And the project was revised a few times. They originally were looking at a larger area and have some slightly different, more extensive objectives. And